I'm Ryan from the Dad.io podcast, a show dedicated to dorky dads everywhere. Part of the Gonna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other dadalicious geeky shows at GonnaGeekNetwork.com.
This is the official GonnaGeek.com show. Each week, we run down the latest news and happenings in the world of geek. These are your hosts for the show, Steven, Chris, and SP.
Welcome to an all-new episode of the official GonnaGeek.com show. I am Steven Chandra, and I am pleased to say that SP is here this week.
I'm going to do the whole show by selfie cam.
Perfect. That's what we all wanted, was more SP. And I'm also happy to say that none other than Chris Farrell's here.
What camera are you using there? Is that a GoPro or is that what?
Yeah, that was a GoPro. Nice. Hero Black 7. Yeah.
Nice. Tight.
Yeah.
And also here, I said none other with Chris Farrell, but also here is the wonderful, you hear him laughing in the background, Suncast.
No. I'm Subcar.
You're what car?
Subcar.
Do you have candy?
Go look back at the Hangout chat.
Okay, fair enough. You're Subcar. Subcar. That's right. I made a typo earlier. Fair enough. So Subcar is here.
Thank God Subcar is here because I was wondering who the heck it was.
What would we do without Subcar?
Oh, Suncast. It's been a while since we've had four of us on here, and I think that's because of the fact that I've had significant technical failures, and I'm very, very happy that we've managed to get you back on here, the four of us together. It's been a long time. Usually you're filling in for somebody, and now we have a full four-person beard cast. Take a bow.
And it's all due to you having a stream deck, finally.
Thank
that is
God.
True. You know what? I said it. I ate crow, and I'll eat crow again. The way that things unfolded tonight, it absolutely made it a heck of a lot easier. So you're right. When you're right, you're right. Also, by the way, who else is really excited? We're recording this today on February 2020. So for those of you who are checking this out in 2022, you're going to go, oh, I remember way back then. It's the kickoff for the XFL soon. Who's excited about that?
Who's your team?
Yay.
Who's your team? Who's got the Seattle Dragons?
This is something that before the show we were talking a little bit about, and very, very intrigued with the names of the teams. If you want to check that out, you should check out. I heard that SP is starting an XFL cast. I heard it's going to be on the GFQ network because GFQ is three letters and XFL is three letters.
Listen, I'm all about those roughnecks.
They're both extreme, too.
Suncast, are you going to produce for me?
Sure.
Okay, let's do it.
Wow, that was easy. I'm excited.
I just completely gave away another show for the Gonna Geek Network. Whoops. Oh, well.
Hey, SP, having that time off from Starling Tribune didn't last long, did it?
I've already eaten into the time that we used to have for the Starling Tribune. So, okay. I don't have any time for this.
XFL fantasy football prep, I know.
Before we do get into the show, let's just take a moment to acknowledge that, yes, this past week, last week, you did wrap up the Starling Tribune, and I wanted to say congratulations to Mr. Chris Farrell, Mr. Stargate Pioneer, and the terrific Michelle Ealy for doing a good run on the Starling Tribune. You wrapped it up. It was emotional to hear you all wrap it up, but you did a wonderful job. And thanks for being my therapy session over the course of several crappy seasons of Arrow.
Definitely needed some therapy, but it was good to wrap up Starling Tribune and put a bow on it.
Oh, I see what you did there, a bow, because you usually put a bow on presents. That's what you meant,
yes,
right?
Yes, I see.
Yeah, sure. We'll go with that.
Let's go ahead and move on to the news. We have a habit here at the GonnaGeek.com show of kind of going a little bit off the rails when we talk about news and and sort of getting a little bit angry at each other and poking fun at each other's news articles. So we're going to go ahead and start off with something that we're going to do none of this, which is why we put Chris Farrell's news first, so that we can get through the seriousness, we can enjoy the actual true awesomeness of his news, and then we can just get to all of the other making fun of the rest of the news points. So Chris, go ahead.
So do you guys remember when we discussed a few months back the Xbox adaptive controller that Microsoft was putting out?
I do remember that, yes.
I do, and I remember Controller Gate a few years ago, too. It was an adaptive controller that was supposed to come out around Christmas, and the guy who was distributing it out of Florida couldn't get him in time, and he ended up berating customers that were disabled because that's why they had the controllers.
Yeah, that's a problem. So if you guys don't remember, the Xbox Adaptive Controller is an official first-party controller that Microsoft released. It was designed to interface with a variety of sensors to basically open up gaming and make it easier for disabled gamers to go and play games instead of having to try and hack together their own solutions of controllers with different pedals and joysticks. This was a giant Xbox One controller that you could plug a variety of different kinds of joysticks, buttons, levers, and whatnot into to configure a setup that anyone could play with. Now, there is some cool stuff that's come out for that. The latest right now is a new peripheral called the Freedom Wing Controller, or adapter rather. This Freedom Wing adapter connects to the Xbox Adaptive Controller and also to a wheelchair through its 9-pin port. What does this mean? It means the joystick that controls a wheelchair every day can be turned into a controller, particularly useful for people who are already used to joysticks and buttons for navigating in their daily life. How'd this come about? Well, a charity organization by the name of Able Gamers created the device alongside the group ATM Makers, a group of tech makers and enthusiasts who focus on assistive technology. The Freedom Wing adapter is being given out through Able Gamers, and people can apply for a grant to get one on their website. What is really cool is ATM Makers found a company to make the printed circuit boards, which they will sell for around $7. Meaning when it's all said and done, a gamer could theoretically build their own adapter for $35 with all the other required materials once the instructions to build it are published online. They will be publishing these instructions online so that anyone can make the Freedom Wing adapter. It's pretty cool. And I found out also by reading the article on The Verge that Able Games COO Steve Spahn told The Verge the 9-pin adapters, or the 9-pin connectors rather, that connect a wheelchair to the device are standard on wheelchair joysticks. So this means if you have a wheelchair that has one of those joystick button combinations, it should be standard that you have that 9-pin adapter, which could then theoretically be plugged directly into the Xbox Adaptive Controller and used to play games. This is cool. This is the cool kind of extensions that Microsoft said they wanted to see when it came to the adaptive controller. They made a point of saying it was going to be open. Anyone could adapt devices they wanted to run on any kind of systems that they could. It runs on Xbox right now. It runs on PC right now. And there are people that have hacked it to work with a Nintendo Switch as well. Wow. This is awesome. Let everyone play games. Let people find ways to do it. And $35. They found a way to make $35 be spent and allow you to hook in controller you already have, which is your wheelchair controller. Now, I assume you're going to have some assistance probably to unplug it and reconnect things. I don't know. But still, this is awesome.
This is quite incredible to see what's been coming out of this since they created this adaptive controller technology or whatever the heck that was that Microsoft created. And this isn't the first sort of project we've seen along the lines of this. And I am so impressed to see it being really adopted to where Microsoft first envisioned when they put this out and whatnot. I remember when they first started talking about it, we were kind of questioning what the future was. Would it be something that could actually translate to practical uses? And I am impressed, very impressed.
I think it's great. So what I was alluding to before was a news story that happened in 2011. So it wasn't related to this at all. But this is not new with adaptive controllers. It's just getting better and better and better. And I'm glad that these companies themselves, the ones that are actually putting out the gaming consoles and the controllers, are actually going ahead and doing something like this, and they don't have to depend on third parties, because there's just a significant part of the population who can use it. And having a disabled sister, it could have enabled her to play with us when we were younger. I'm not sure she could have or not, but I just think this is great. I also have a coworker that has a son that has SMA, and it's very difficult for him to move his arms, and he goes to therapy to strengthen them as much as he can, but it's just very difficult, and this sort of thing can help him game, and it would be awesome.
You know, you mentioned a second ago there, you weren't sure if your sister would have been able to, but the thing is, because this technology wasn't there, you didn't even have the chance to find out, right? And so yep. That's just the opportunity of have given the try there, the potential, right? So yeah, I think that this is incredible. Suncast, any thoughts?
I love the fact that they're making this so open source and available to anybody that wants to tinker around with it. Because I think that's the key thing here is that what they saw with like the Xbox Kinect, when they originally came out with that, it never really worked for the intended purpose, but there were so many people out there that were taking these Xbox Kinects and doing all sorts of different experiments with them that led to a whole lot more technologies based around the sort of multi-camera type of system. And I think this is kind of in the same realm where by allowing it to be so open and used that we could see more than just benefits to what we're seeing now.
I completely agree. And you nailed a point there being so open. We didn't talk about that, but they are being fairly open with this. So I think you nailed it. Well, moving on to our next news point here, let's talk briefly about Amazon Echo Show 5 and 8. If you didn't know this, the Amazon Echo Show is a displayed version of the Amazon Echo. Started way back years and years ago with the original Echo Show, which evolved several generations, several iterations, and then they came out with different sizes, including a 5-inch version, Echo Show 5, and an 8-inch version, the Echo Show 8. The Echo Show 5s and 8s have allegedly been doing pretty well compared to the Echo Show original because of the form factor. More people are finding a better spot for it, better sound, variety of different reasons. But there has been an update for both of these models, which all the articles said it was these two models. I haven't seen it on the actual Echo Show itself. But apparently, you can now have a barcode scanner basically built in. Because if you didn't know that, the Amazon Echo does have the ability for you to add something to a shopping list. You say, add blah, blah, blah to my shopping list, and it does. Well, because the Echo Show 5s and 8s, and the Echo Shows do have this too, so I don't know why it's not on there, have a built-in camera, you can actually tell it to scan this item and add it to my shopping list, which will then bring up a little barcode scanner type thing on the display, and you can hold the item up to the Echo Show 5 or Echo Show 8, and it'll scan it, of course, find the information, hopefully, and then add it to your shopping list. So just make things a little bit easier. Now, I wanted to bring this up for a couple of different reasons. Number one, because of the fact that, it, like I said, it seems to only be on the 5 and 8 from what I can see, which is odd. But the second thing is, do you think that you'd actually use this? Because I think it would be kind of helpful for people who want to get specific about what they want to buy. And I think that for some people, they'd be able to say, just add milk. But for some people, it might just be easier just to hold it up, throw out the box and whatever. Because you might forget what size you had. You might forget the exact specific flavor or whatever, right? You know, it might make it a little bit easier when you're trying to buy one of those products that have a bunch of variations to do with it. So I think it's an interesting idea. I might consider giving it a try if I move my Echo Show 5 out to the kitchen. I've thought about it. Maybe I could get my wife to use it by doing this now because we do this all the time with kids. We run out of something, we're packing lunches, and then I could tell the Amazon device to add it to the list, but I could also just scan it now and then throw out the box. I don't know. I it's interesting to me. SP, what's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, we use it all the time for the kids. You know, when we're making lunches for the kids and we run out of something, we'll go over. No, wait. I don't have any kids in the house.
Empty nester.
Yeah. I wanted to.
You got another wife we don't know about?
Chris, I wanted to ask you, you still use MyFitnessPal, I see, right?
I do, not as much as I should, but yes, I still do use it.
Do you use it to log food? I know you use it for exercise. Okay. When you use it to log food, do you use the UPC scanner to put in food into your meal plan.
As much as possible.
Yes. So that's already there. And I use that too. And because I already use it, I would definitely use it for this as well. So Stephen, in addition to this UPC scanner, which is going to make your lives easier, one thing that I've found with the Echo Show, because I've got the full one in the kitchen, is the pictures. Somehow the women, they love the pic. You put some family pictures on there, you put set it at the backdrop, and they just love it. In addition to all the other great things like the recipes and the timers and everything else like that. So that's good. But my final question for you, since we don't know if it's available on the full Echo Show, is it going to be available on the Echo Spot? Because it got one of those too.
The Echo Spot doesn't have a camera, right?
Oh, yeah.
It does.
Oh, it does. Oh, okay. Interesting. I wonder, see, where I started to go when I thought about I wasn't seeing this referenced on the actual Echo Show was maybe, was there a difference in the quality of the front camera? I'm not sure. It was just a question I had. Like, was maybe the Echo Show 5 and 8 being newer, being a better quality? And if so, probably. What would the spot be?
They're not newer than the second generation show. They came out at the same time.
Okay, then I'm not sure. Maybe it is on there. And just the articles that I were seeing were all saying 5 and 8, but I could be totally wrong on that. Maybe it is available for the Echo Show regular.
I'll try it.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing on this. The utility is really limited to how much do you buy grocery or pantry items from Amazon. And I buy some, but most of them, it's just easier to go to the grocery store. If you could go back, God, it's probably 200 some odd episodes, they had like the Echo Wand that I did a review of because it was $20, but if you bought it for $20, they gave you $20 of store credit. So it was effectively free. And what it was a battery-powered UPC scanner that ran Amazon Voice services, and you could scan things and it would add it to your list. It was a real novel concept at first when I started using it. I put a bunch of things in there. I would just scan things to see if it worked. But then I realized I don't really buy enough stuff from the Amazon pantry or the grocery side of the house for it to be worthwhile. Now, occasionally, if there's something that's hard for me to find, I'll buy it that way. Yes, SP.
So you have Kroger in your area, right?
I have a Kroger about 5 minutes away from my house.
You probably use it for a lot of your shopping. Maybe not all of it, but you probably use it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Have you used the service that was formerly known, they've changed it now, but it was formerly known as ClickList?
Yes, I have used that.
So I know that Amazon is trying to get into the grocery business.
Well, they do own America. Whole Foods. So yes.
Do you have a Whole Foods nearby?
Nope.
Okay. So when that happens, though, yeah, then you can use it in the same manner as people use ClickList now, or right, what used to be ClickList. I forget what it's called now.
Yeah, and that's my assumption is once, or if a Whole Foods was in your area, they could very feasibly link this to your Amazon account and say, hey, process everything on my list there. I want to pick it up on my way home after work. And you would just swing by, pick up your order, get back in the car. That would be useful. And Whole Foods is probably a better utility than trying to find some of these items on Amazon, because the prices wildly fluctuate on Amazon for pantry items, it seems like. Sometimes you can find a great deal on something, then you go to order it 6 months later, and you're like, this is like $5 more than normal. What the heck? Like, point in case, there is a salad dressing I really like by Good Seasons. It's that one that you mix in the carafe with the vinegar and the oil. You can always find the Italian flavor everywhere, but there's a garlic and herb one that I can only find at Walmart. That is the only place that seems to carry it. And occasionally I can find it online. I scanned it with my barcode scanner that was in the Echo Wand or whatever it's called. I don't even remember. And it was like $3 a pack on Amazon because it wasn't actually Amazon selling. It was a third party reseller. And that was the only person providing it. So it's really hit or miss. I love the thought that you had, SP, of being able to tie it to a Whole Foods account. And if I had a Whole Foods and they did something like that, tons of utility, that would be fantastic. But as it is right now, even how Steven's describing it, it just sounds like one of those, okay, I'm going to try it a couple times. And for a few things that might be easier to find on Amazon, I'll go that route. It's a novel concept that might build to something.
The only thing that I should mention, though, is that my understanding, and I don't use this enough, but I've seen it, is that the shopping list is isolated from your Amazon account. So when you tell it to add something to your shopping list, it shows up under the lists section of the Amazon Echo app.
Is that how this barcode scanning works? because the wand does not do that. It puts it in your cart.
No, and that's what I mean is I believe this still is tied into the shopping list function of that, which will be a separate independent list because it's saying, and I can't try this. I tried it just now, actually, while I was muted, tried it, and I don't think it's in Canada yet. But I think because you're saying scan this to my shopping list, I don't see why the functionality would be different than add this to my shopping list, which does have an independent list.
So I've noticed Suncast is largely silent during this discussion. Suncast, I just have one word that might perk your interest in this. Lollipops.
But lollipops don't have barcodes. You completely ruined it.
The package does.
Oh, fair enough. They do. That's true. The package does.
Well, I'm in pretty much the same boat as Chris, where it's like, okay, yeah, this is pretty much novel unless you have a Whole Foods nearby where you can actually get this stuff at possibly a reasonable price. That's been my experience too, where I want to buy all this stuff on Amazon, but then when I go and look for these things on Amazon, that's usually by a third party, and it's like multiple packs, so you have to buy like multiples of something, kind of like at Sam's Club, and then you have to pay these ridiculous prices. So something that you would go to the store, buy one of, and it's like, you know, $3 or $4, well, on Amazon, you got to buy three of them, and it's now suddenly $20.
Just because you live in Michigan and have reduced access to goods across that international border doesn't mean that the rest of us can't enjoy it as well.
Before we move on to our next news point here, I did ask the question, would you use a barcode scan feature like this? To which we had a 50-50 split down the middle for yes and no. Unfortunately, it did bounce back and forth a little bit, but that's where it landed. So it's a roll of the dice. You know what else was a roll of the dice? The Star Trek feature films. Those were sure a roll of the dice. And you're going to tell us all about how real life Vizier is happening, right, SP?
That's right. So last week, there was a tweet from the NASA Voyager Twitter account, which actually encompasses both. I mean, it's really the first one, but they tweet for the second one, too. And a tweet came out and said, here's the skinny. My twin went to do a roll to calibrate the onboard magnetometer, overdrew power, and tripped software designed to automatically protect the spacecraft. Voyager 2's power state is good, and instruments are back on, resuming science soon. That was from NASA Voyager. I haven't seen another update. I did check again tonight. That tweet was sent on January 28th, 2020. So I looked around, I found three articles, one on universetoday.com, one on space.com, and one on cnet.com. And I took elements from all of them to give you this combined researched news story tonight. So the CNET article was written by Amanda Kuser on January 29th, and it was titled NASA's Voyager 2 probe suffers glitch at the edge of the solar system. Space.com's article was by Megan Bartles, and it was titled Voyager 2 just missed a spin in interstellar space, but it should be fine, NASA says. And Universe Today, which article published on February 1st, 2020, so it's the most recent one, it was written by Evan Gao, like Cody Gao. I wonder if Evan and Cody are related.
I was going to say they're one and the same, right?
Oh, it could be a pen name. Yeah. Okay, I got it. And the article goal was titled Voyager 2 went into fault protection mode, but engineers brought it back online. So Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 launched in 1977. They went and discovered various different things with different planets and now have exited the solar system. So let's take all of us down one by one to discover what is going on with Voyager 2 today. So the Voyager 2 spacecraft is recovering from a glitch, but NASA said that engineers are confident that the probe will be back to normal science operations soon. The issue began on Saturday, January 25th, when mission scientists believe the spacecraft failed to take a quick 360-degree spin that it needed to make to calibrate one of its instruments called the MAG, which is the Triaxial Flux Gate Magnetometer. The MAG is investigating the solar wind boundary with the interstellar magnetic field and beyond. NASA's Voyager 2 spacecraft went into fault protection mode on Tuesday, January 28th. The fault protection routines automatically protect the spacecraft in harmful conditions. Both Voyagers have these routines programmed into their systems. It's a failsafe. Once in fault protection mode, NASA engineers were still in communication with the spacecraft and receiving telemetry, but no scientific data is being received yet. That's the latest information I have. The troubleshooting is slow going. The probe is 11.5 billion. Carl Sagan there, who was actually involved in both these probes. Miles away, 11.5 billion miles away, or 18.5 billion kilometers away. And signals take 17 hours to travel one way, and mission personnel must wait a total of 34 hours to see whether a command worked. That's like playing chess by mail. NASA said that there was a delay in the maneuver to calibrate the MEG, which caused two scientific systems that draw a lot of power to be on at the same time. Of course, there's a tight power budget on Voyager 2 because its radioisotope thermoelectric generators are running down. That's the RTG. If you watch The Martian, it was the RTG that kept him warm and probably irradiated him too. Okay.
Teeny bit.
NASA isn't sure how much longer the Voyager probes will be able to keep running, but scientists on the mission estimated in November of last year, 2019, that the spacecraft could lose power within about 5 years. Voyager 2 is losing about 4% of its power each year. A lot of power is needed to keep systems on the spacecraft from freezing, including fuel lines. If those lines froze and broke, then Voyager 2 would no longer be able to point its antenna towards Earth, and the mission would effectively be over. So this is kind of serious, guys. Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 spacecraft are focused on studying the region just outside the heliopause, which is a sheath created by the solar wind of charged particles that constantly streams off of our sun. Voyager 2 crossed that boundary in November 2018, joining its twin, which had done so in 2012. And these things have been operational once again since 1977. It's kind of amazing that they're able to keep technology that was designed in 1977 still functioning at the edge of the solar system.
So I'm not too worried about the fact that the potential for the mission could be over, because I know they'll eventually just find that transwarp corridor, right? That's how Voyagers always end, right?
It's got to be out there. You'd figure it would be outside the heliopause, right? Because you'd want to sheath it. You protect it from the sheath of the sun.
When do we find the Borg? Because Voyager found the Borg every other week when ratings were down.
Well, when John Delancey comes to your house.
I love Q. I want him to come to my house. He's now, my favorite.
Mind you, he will come to your house naked, though.
You say that like I would object. In all seriousness, though, 1977 to now, this is incredible feat of engineering. These things are still flying, still.
Oh, yeah.
Voyager 2 is still sending back telemetry. Man, NASA knows their S is the best way to put it when it comes to building these things, because who would have thought that longer than I've been alive, this probe has been sending data back?
Yeah, I know. That's the thing that's absolutely crazy to me. Whenever SP brings up a story like this, where it's like, seriously, whenever it's not a joke, this time it's not a joke. Whenever SP brings up like a 70s style, now I'm going a whole other way, but a 70s piece of spacecraft or prior, right? And he's talking about how like the mission could be over. It's like, wow, like that's before me. It's crazy that we still are getting information from something so old. Like it should be something that was long dead when you think about it, with how much we've evolved over the last, I was going to say 30 years, promptly realizing that it's not the year 2000 anymore.
I mean, here's where it gets interesting. If you think about it, the Mars Pathfinder mission is probably the equivalent when it comes to some of the more modern but still longer lasting things. And it's starting to have issues now, as we've talked about, but Voyager's still not. Older equipment, things like that. It's just fascinating that something I remember watching as a kid being the Mars probes and the Mars rovers is the ones that are probably going to fail before something that started before I was born. Granted, it's a completely different type of mission being on Mars versus being in outer space, I'm sure. But it's just weird how the human brain looks then and goes, wow, holy crap, that's amazing.
All right, so Suncast, why don't you let us into the secret? What's actually going on with Voyager? Is it a real, true probe, or did it die a long time ago? You're a part of Secret NASA.
I can't tell you anything.
Just to put a punctuation on what Chris was saying, the Spitzer Space Telescope, which was launched in 2003, just had end of life this past week.
That's crazy.
That's nuts.
And the fact that it's that far out, you know, like it's taken 17 hours to send one command, and then you got to wait another 17 hours to find out that whether or not that command was successful.
It's like the scene in The Martian when they're trying to communicate with hexadecimals going back and forth. And it just does, it takes a while because you have a delay back and forth to Mars. It's not instantaneous communication. And this is just farther out. I'm surprised it's only a 34-hour round trip.
They didn't build AIM into it? AOL Instant Messenger?
1977, dude. 77.
Can you imagine how much anxiety there would be, though, if you're like, you're the guy that's sending the command. You're like, oh, crap, I think I fat-fingered that. You got to wait 34 hours to make sure you didn't just blow up the probe. I mean, could you imagine just, you know, you're probably sitting there, H-I space W-O-R-L-D, enter. And then you're like, oh, no, did I hit the wrong key? Could you just imagine how hellacious those 34 hours would be as you're sitting like, oh my God, I think I just blew up the probe. It's been around longer than I've been alive. My career is over. Everything I know is over. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God.
For 34 hours. Yeah.
34 hours.
I don't know the exact process that they have in place, but I would gather that they would run it through some sort of command simulation of the central bus itself, and that they would run the commands through a checker before it goes out. But that even is not infallible too, because guess what? We've bombed Mars several times.
That would give me an anxiety condition if I was on that team, I'm sure, because I'd just be sitting there like, oh my God, did I screw it up? Oh man, oh man.
That's why Suncast is on Mars right now, by the way.
Fair enough. To reduce the speed?
No. He screwed up something.
What did you crash into Mars, Suncast?
That's a story for another podcast. We're not going to go into that
right now. Definitely not.
Well, moving on to the next news point here. Suncast, you had something you wanted to mention about AI. I hear that you are AI. Is that what the story is?
I wish I was. You know how I love talking about AI and just everything that goes along with it. Well, this is kind of a pretty interesting article. I found this on Engadget, and it says, a drug designed entirely by artificial intelligence is about to enter clinical human trials for the first time. The drug, which is intended to treat obsessive-compulsive disorder, was discovered using AI systems from Oxford-based biotech company Exscientia. While it would usually take around 4.5 years to get a drug to this stage of development, Exscientia says that by using AI tools, it has taken them less than 12 months. Now, the drug is known as DSP-1181, was created by using algorithms to sift through potential compounds, checking them against a huge database of parameters, including patients' genetic factors. So this is pretty interesting, the fact that they're now taking AI-compiled medicine and doing human trials with it. This is something that it's like, okay, do you trust artificial intelligence to formulate some sort of medicine that is going to treat you? Or do you think this is something that will actually speed up the medical world, where we can actually have medicine developed in far fewer years than what we have now? Or like they were saying, it takes about 4.5 years now to get to human trials. Once you discover something, now it's less than 12 months with AI.
I personally support the future of our AI overlords. I have to say that, you know, I 100% support all of their endeavors to create these medications that will implant a certain virus in us that makes us go extinct so that they can take over.
That is exactly what I was thinking. No joke. I'm like, oh my God. So what they're going to do is they're going to have an AI that builds some sort of medication. They're going to the AI is going to falsify all the information so that when they actually do the human trials and start, you know, giving this medicine to people, it's going to have some sort of AI genetic code in it, and we're all going to turn into AI drones or something.
I was just expecting Soylent Green is made of people. In all seriousness, though, I'm sure there's got to be some kind of check and balance. It's not like, oh, AI spit out these results, let's push drugs on people. people are involved in some way, shape, or form along the way, even if it's just reviewing the final results, I would assume. And if it can help speed production on medications that people desperately need, I'm kind of on board with it. If you can speed the cure for cancer by using AI to help, that seems like an awesome idea to me. It's just a matter of people need to be able to check it before we start saying automatically, oh, AI did it. Just give it to the people. They should be fine.
So at this point, they're saying there's not even any rules for this kind of thing. Like this article speculates, all right, who's making the rules for the use of AI in drug research? So right now there are no rules for AI in drug research.
There's not rules for AI in general in a lot of things as it is right now. I mean, it's arguably a political conversation that's been had in some circles is what is the future of AI and how should it be regulated? And I don't know. I'm not enough of an expert to be able to tell you. I took a course on AI in college, at least for a little bit before I dropped it.
This sounds like a job for an AI.
We'll just assign it to Chris I.
So Exscientia, which is the company in Oxford, UK, partnered with Sumitomo, which is headquartered in Japan, and this announcement came out at the end of January. When did the coronavirus start?
That was in China, though. That was in China.
Exactly. Japan has something against China.
Guys, it comes from Corona beer. Didn't you see the stories about everyone Googling to see if you get coronavirus from beer?
So if you don't put the lime in the Corona, then you can get coronavirus? Well, is that what you're saying?
It's if you put the lime in, but you don't put your thumb over the top and flip it upside down, then you get the coronavirus because you have not drank the Corona correctly.
See, thank God I don't drink.
My understanding, though, was that it came from listening to the Wu-Tang Clan, because isn't this the Wu-Tang flu? Sorry.
Steven, don't you know that the Wu-Tang Clan ain't nothing to bleep with?
So we've been joking, and I realize this is a serious situation and that hundreds of people have already died, so we're not insensitive to that, but it just came up in my thought process that the drug
China is
company
going to demand that this episode be taken down.
they might.
Yeah, they might. They might. But no, okay. So I did ask the poll at geeks.live, what do you trust more, human created medicine or AI created medicine? And actually 67% said AI created medicine and only 33% said human created medicine.
I mean, there's an argument to be made that the AI isn't taking weird payments from folks to continue certain drug trials and researches and could theoretically take the human factor out.
But it's, you still have to question. Have that human factor to build the software for the AI.
True. Unless, so someone's going to program the AI to be like, oh, this guy donates more money to company X, so we're going to make sure we buy our chemical ingredients to make this drug. I don't know, and I don't know enough to speak intelligently about how drug research works. I know it's incredibly complicated and incredibly expensive, and that is arguably part of the problem when it comes to prescription drug costs.
I know a little bit about it because of my coworker whose son has SMA, and the FDA has, in the last couple of years, has made some tremendous strides forward to extend human testing to those that have no other option, basically. They've tried everything, it doesn't work. And so, okay, we have this experimental treatment. We don't know what it's going to do for you, but you can try it because nothing else is going to help you. And that is expanding the drug research, but it's nowhere near as quick as this. This is a 4-to-1 in terms of getting the drug out from the development to actually human trials. And you still, even with the advanced law that's out there for people that have no other choice, it still takes a while to develop the drug to begin with. So I'm actually all for this, except for the fact that our overlords are going to try to kill us. So we'll see.
And before we go to a very, very quick extra, extra pick, I should go and bounce back here. And on the Voyager talk. I asked the question, is this how we get V'ger? To which 60% said yes, 20% said no, and 20% said I hated Star Trek the Motion Picture. So there
that
you go.
That movie's so bad.
Oh, that was an option?
That was
funny. So bad. I would have picked that one. Hated Star Trek the Motion. I didn't hate it. I mean, if you watch it in conjunction with 2001, you're fine. But if you watch it in conjunction with any other sci-fi out there, you're like, oh my God, boring.
And the last thing that we should go to quickly, Suncast brought up a couple of extra points there. Suncast, pick one and talk about one.
So this is kind of interesting. An artist from Germany named Simon Reckert found a humorous way to game Google Maps. He was using a wagon loaded with 99 smartphones, and he was able to hack Google Maps to create virtual traffic jams throughout Berlin. So basically, he's just walking around Berlin with a little red wagon full of 99 phones all running Google Maps. And then he just walks slowly. And then on Google Maps, you know how it has all the color lines like green, yellow, and red for the traffic?
Yep.
Well, he was creating red lines.
I'm so glad you picked this one.
In Google Maps.
It's so good. So good.
And, that's fantastic.
And by the way, I should just point out he had 99 smartphones and Windows Phone was not one. I believe that's what it was. No?
They don't
think
make
of the
that
fun
anymore.
That frats and sororities are going to have with this information now. Okay, everybody, exactly. Let's throw your phone into the wagon.
Well, he was saying that at some points, he was able to have traffic diverted away from the traffic jam that he created.
Just by 99 phones. For those of you who have a second, you should Google this or go to GunnaGeek.com/show and find the link, because it's a hilarious picture just seeing this guy pulling this wagon with a bunch of phones in it. It's
right
really
down
funny.
The middle of the street.
Yeah. I love it. I think it's great. And just goes to show how sometimes we have these incredible systems that are made by such data mining companies and they can be fooled by a guy with a wagon.
To be fair, the point of his little experiment was to show our reliance on apps like, Google Maps, Airbnb, Uber.
And to be credit, Google kind of responded back. I found their quote, "Whether via cart or camel, we love seeing creative uses of Google Maps as it helps us make maps work better over time." They noted the company doesn't exclusively use phones operating maps as proof of traffic jams, but they're going to fix this shortly.
Yeah.
Camel, do you know how many smartphones you could strap to a camel?
More than
278.
A lot.
Well, before we get to our segment where Chris is going to talk a little bit about his Echo Buds, let's just take a moment here and say, SP, thanks for joining us today. We know you got to bounce a little bit early before we get to that segment, and I wanted to acknowledge that before you bounce off. If you have a second, please do go check out the Starling Tribune's final episode. I know that's what you were going to promote this week, SP, weren't you?
Yep, the final bow.
Yes, so check that out at GunnaGeek.com. And SP, we shall see you back here again next week, hopefully, unless I see you through the bushes first. Let's go ahead and move on to Chris's segment.
So let's go back in time for a moment, guys. If you go back way back to November 2018 with Gunna Geek 263 entitled Gonna Talk Tick Pods, I did my first review of wireless Bluetooth headphones that I really enjoyed that I had backed on Indiegogo by a company called Mobvoi. And up until recently, I had my Tick Pods. They'd been working great. But all of a sudden, one day, I took my headphones out. I was going to go into the grocery store, put them both in, and my left bud just wouldn't turn on. The light wouldn't blink, anything like that. And what I found out after some quick Googling, things like that, and trying to troubleshoot them, the left bud was just totally dead. And I went, ugh. This is annoying. Looked into my warranty possibilities, saw my warranty was expired, but that I could pay to get it repaired. And that's when I also noticed, Tick Pods are down to $50 brand new right now. By the time I paid to repair this, I could have effectively just bought a new set of headphones. It really wasn't worth it. And part of the reason that price drop happened, they just released their new product, the Tick Pods Pro, which is designed to compete with like the Apple the AirPods Pro thing like that. Very expensive, feature rich, things like that. So really what it came down to is I needed new Bluetooth headphones and I wasn't quite sure what way to go. And that's when it was like the sales gods, the sky lit up and they rained down their goodness upon me as I saw, oh, that's right. I forgot Amazon has their Echo Buds, their own headphones that they made. I remember reading about them. They sounded interesting. They're normally like $129. And then all of a sudden Amazon temporarily dropped the price to $89.99. And I went, well, this sounds like a good time to try it out. It also helps that I had $15 of Best Buy gift certificates that was about to expire too from some stuff I'd previously bought. So I got a decent deal. Right now, if you were interested in TechPods, you can get them on Amazon or Best Buy, in fact, for $89.99. And technically, on Amazon site, you can finance them at no cost. They'll just charge you $18 over 5 months to pay for them if you wanted to get a set. So I purchased the Amazon Echo Buds because I needed Bluetooth headphones. And much like the TechPods, they come in a little case. In this case, it's a black case with the Amazon swoosh on it that holds both. And really all that's on it is a little LED on the front that shows the charge status and a micro USB plug on the side. That is all that's on this case.
What color is that LED that's on there?
Right now it is green. It changes color depending on the battery state of the battery within the case. So when it is green, it means you have over 40% of your charge left. Then it turns yellow. Then it turns red.
That would make sense that it's green since it's the Echo Bud. I mean, Buds.
Oh, I see what you did there. So let's get a little background on these. The Echo Buds are Bluetooth 5.0 headphones. My TechPods were Bluetooth 4.0 for comparison. What's the difference? Really, it's just better battery life is what it comes down to with Bluetooth 5.0. And I've noticed when I check the Bluetooth battery gauge on my phone, it actually shows up single percentage drops versus, like, I think it was about 5% drops I was seeing with the TechPods from time to time. Really, Bluetooth 5 is the newest thing out there, so they went that route. So when it comes to pairing on your cell phone, how do you do it? If you're on iOS or Android, download the Amazon Voice Services app. That is a keyword for A-L-E-X-A, which I'm going to try not to say during this segment. The easiest way to pair is that way. You can also pair just by opening the case and triggering pairing mode by holding the button on the bottom of the case for 15 seconds, I think it is, and it'll pair that way. But if you use the Voice Services app, you open it up, you say add a new device, you go to other, and you select Echo Buds, and it pairs up immediately right then and there. It's super easy and arguably the best way to do it. And then from that point forward, anytime you open the case and pull the buds out, they automatically connect to your cell phone. You get a notification from Amazon Voice Services in your system tray that shows that they're connected and that will also potentially show you any media that is playing. Why is it cool to use the Voice Services app? Because the app itself monitors the charge of both the left and right bud and the charge that's in the case. So when you open up the Voice Services app, you can see the charge of everything there and get an idea of whether you need to charge right away. I thought that was a neat, cool way to do it. You can also configure your controls for your headphones via this app, and we'll talk a little bit about the controls here in a second. One of the things that I really liked about these headphones is that you could use either one at one time if you want, or both. If you go back to my TechPods review, you'll recall I said you had to use the right pod all the time, and you could optionally wear the left one. There was no option to wear the left one only, because the way they worked is your right pod was the master pod, and then it synced with the left earbud to basically ensure you got full audio. The way the Echo Buds work is that both buds sync up with your phone on their own. So there is no master-slave connection between the two buds that are in your ears. It's really nice. So that means you can wear only one. You could take the bud out and hand it to your seatmate if you're on an airplane and you guys could watch a movie together. It's pretty nice in that regard. Pretty nice. So the controls, this is where I don't like it as much. They're pretty simple devices. Once they're in your ear, there's a little touchpad that you can either double tap or hold down, and those are really the only physical controls you have. Now, luckily, these are configurable via the Amazon Voice Services app. You can set up a double tap on your left bud to do something specific, same with a double tap on your right bud, or a press and hold on both buds. So how I have mine set up right now is my left bud, if I hold it down, triggers the Google Assistant. If I double tap, it will do a skip track. My right one, if I double tap, will turn off the active noise reduction software that they have. And if I hold it, we'll continue to also do Google Assistant because that was the easiest way to do it. So you might be asking, well, Chris, how are you going to pause your headphones and your music if you don't want to listen or you're talking to someone? It's simple. Take one of them out of your ear. They automatically pause. It's nice in that regard. So there are other ways to control the buds, and that's arguably a good thing because, yeah, I don't feel like I have enough flexibility to control them like I did before on the TechPods. So how do you do it? Well, it's an Amazon Echo product. That means it automatically has Amazon Voice Services baked into it, meaning anything your Echo devices can do in your house, these Echo Buds can do as well. if you have them hooked into, if you have your Echo hooked into home automation, you can say a word, turn on the living room lights with your earbuds. It will do it. You can ask her what time it is. You can ask her to add things to your shopping list. You can ask her to pause music, skip tracks, raise the volume, lower the volume. That is the way they work around not having a lot of buttons that you can control on the side of the earphones. And it works all right. It's a little weird, though, when you realize, oh, I'm out and about and I'm going, hey, A-word, do something for me. And everyone kind of gives you a look because they're not expecting it. But you get used to it. How does Amazon listen to you? There's three mics on these earbuds. Each earbud has three mics on it. Two are used for beamforming to help better understand your words. And then there is one that is always listening for the trigger word. You can turn these off via the Amazon Voice Services app. However, when you do so, the voice recognition goes away. I do believe that also carries over to triggering your digital assistants like Siri or Google Assistant. Those will all be disabled. So that's kind of annoying. I'm already used to the Amazon Voice Services stuff, so I left the headphones on all the time. I don't care. They know everything about me as it is. So it's naturally an extension of everything I have done with Amazon Voice Services in my house. So let's talk a little bit more details on it before we start getting how I used it. Battery. I know that's what everyone wants to know. When you get these Bluetooth headphones that you just stick in your ears, how long do you get for playback per charge? How often can I recharge it? Things like that. Amazon says you'll get 5 hours of music playback per charge, meaning you take the buds out of your case, plug them in your ears, you get 5 hours. When your battery runs out, you can recover 2 hours of charge with a 15-minute quick charge in the case. So arguably, you can get back to your music pretty quickly. And since you can just use one bud at a time, you could kind of hot swap until you get them both charged to a state you like. They do say that the charging case will provide 20 hours of charge. So full recharges, which I think is pretty fair. It's analogous to what I had with the Tick Pods. And I think it's slightly less than what you get with the AirPods from when I was looking those up. But still, 20 hours, that's going to get most people through a day as it is. When you buy the headphones, what comes in the box? You get the case with the two earbuds inside. You get three sets of ear tips in small, medium, and large size, and three pairs of wing tips that can also be applied. What is a wing tip for? If you're going to the gym and you feel like they're going to fall out, it's kind of got a little hook that sits in the inner part of your ear and holds things in place. I haven't used them yet. I feel like they fit my ears pretty well, and they're pretty comfortable, so I haven't removed it. And in fact, I've had one in my right ear as we record this live that you guys can see if you're watching the video. It's been in there the whole time. Now, it's connected to my phone, and nothing's been coming through music-wise, but it's pretty comfortable. And honestly, if I were just talking to you, unless you saw right in my ear, they're pretty unobtrusive black little devices. They're tiny. They fit well. And you can see when I pull it out and show it on camera, they're not giant devices. They're pretty nicely sized. Not as small as AirPods or anything like that, but still do the job pretty well. I'm pretty pleased with them. And I will say I had to go to the small ear tips because for me, the mediums were too big and I was wondering why my ears were hurting after about 10 minutes of wearing them and realized I have to go down to the small size tips. And once I did that, I've worn these things for about an hour and a half at a time. That's my longest go. And I wasn't uncomfortable. So I thought that was kind of a good sign. I've taken to wearing them when I'm doing projects around the house, things like that, because it's real nice. Like I mentioned, Amazon Voice Services baked in. Also my digital assistant. So in my case, I have Google Assistant, but if you were on iOS, like say Suncast, you could trigger Siri through them. That's pretty cool. And what I found was also really neat is when you have an Amazon Voice Services device, you can put skills and apps on it. One of which I have is like Pocket Casts. My podcast app is hooked into it. I also have SiriusXM hooked into it. If you have the buds in and you say, hey, A word, open Pocket Casts, she's not going to open the Pocket Cast app on your phone. She's going to open the version of the skill that you have and play it through that, but still give you playback controls on screen courtesy of the Amazon app. I thought that was kind of neat. She did the same thing with SiriusXM when I triggered it that way. So it will run apps you may not have installed on your phone, but are just skills that you have through your Amazon Voice Services devices. I thought that was pretty slick, and I was just curious whether it would work, and it did. I was pleasantly surprised. One of the other features that I really like on this lot that Amazon has pushed heavily, especially when it came to marketing this, is they have a lot of, they have a noise cancellation technology they've licensed from Bose. It is the Bose active noise reduction technology they're using. Supposedly it is a generation behind what is currently in Bose headphones, but it's really good. And you can turn it off and on when you're listening to music. As some experiments, I wore when I was at the grocery store, I turned the noise cancellation on. I could barely hear anything around me. All of the buzz of people talking, carts getting pushed around, and the really crappy grocery store music they put over the intercom, I couldn't hear it. All I heard was my music. And if the music paused, a slight little buzz as it filtered out all the noise around me. I was pleasantly surprised how well that worked. And I'll talk a little bit more on some of my uses of that at the very end. Finally, the Bluetooth profiles it has. Some people like to get into the specs a lot. It has the A2DP profile, the AVRCP, and the hands-free profile, HFP profiles, that this supports. So pretty much all the current modern Bluetooth profiles supported by this. Like I said, I've had them about a week. I've used them a lot. One of the coolest instances I can go to, I can describe for you guys about how the noise reduction worked is I was going through a lot of old bank statements, insurance paperwork, and things like that that needed to be shredded. And I hate shredding because it's so loud. I can't hear any music or anything going on around me. And I went, wait a second. I just got new headphones that have noise reduction technology. I popped both the Echo Buds in my ears, turned on the noise reduction, and started shredding. And the shredder was just a low hum in the background, blocked out by my music and by the noise reduction technology. And I was really pleasantly surprised how well that worked for me. I'm kind of a believer. It would work well at the gym, and it works really well in public when you don't want to pay attention to anyone around you. However, comma, if you were, say, running outside where there were cars and other traffic, you might want to turn off the noise reduction technology. And what it will do then is use those microphones to pipe through at a low volume the external sounds around you. So you could hear a car honk, or you could hear someone walking up behind you or running laps on the same track as you. So you can trigger it as you need to. A couple other points on this, and I swear I'll stop rambling and you guys can ask some questions about it yourself. I ran into one quirk and it really worried me at first, and I ended up figuring out it was no big deal. But when I first paired them to my phone, there's a notification that shows up on screen from the Amazon Voice Services app that says there is a Bluetooth device connected. Well, when I got done with the buds, I put them in the case, I snapped it shut, I set it down on top of my table, and I started playing on my phone, and I saw, wait a second, it says these headphones are still connected. This shouldn't be happening. I closed the case. So I opened up the Echo Buds case, pulled the headphones out, pushed them back in, made sure everything was connected in to the charging pins appropriately, shut it again, and it was still connected. So what I ended up finding out after I did some Googling and some Redditing is that how they do firmware updates and things like that on these Echo Buds is when it is paired to your phone, when you are done listening at some point in time, when you put the buds back into charge, rather, and you close the lid, it will check and see if there's a firmware update while connected to your phone. If there is a firmware update, it will stay connected while it downloads and installs the firmware. And once that's completed, it will disconnect the Bluetooth connection. So that is what was going on, but freaking me out because I'd never had any other Bluetooth headphones like this that once you close the case stayed connected. And at that point, I was like, I'm just going to return these things if I can't get them to disconnect because this is not what I want. Ever since it installed the last firmware update, within minutes, probably arguably seconds, I haven't paid a ton of close attention, it disconnects from my phone like it's supposed to. And yes, it did do a firmware update. The first thing I noticed when I put the headphones on the next time I opened the app is there was a new setup feature on there to help you figure out what are the best ear tips that work for you. And how it does that is it plays a bunch of music out of the tips, out of the buds while they're plugged in your ears, and uses those three microphones to figure out how much sound is leaking out and tell you what's a good fit and what isn't. And that actually helped me figure out what size tips I should be wearing because the mediums were leaking a lot of sound because they didn't fit correctly. All in all, I'm pretty pleased with them. A couple minor quibbles. I feel like the case might be slightly too big when compared to my TicPods one or what you see with AirPods. And part of me is also miffed that in the year 2020, I still have a micro USB charger connection on the side of this. I feel like everything should be USB-C at this point in time. I'm not going to be like, oh my God, this product fails because they used micro USB. I'm just kind of annoyed and irked by it. Overall, they're minor quibbles. I love them. And honestly, the stupidest little thing that I love about these things is that the magnets in the case are super strong. Like if you open the TicPods case and held it upside down, sometimes they'd fall out. So for example, right here, if you're watching the video, I have the case upside down. I am shaking it hard. And those headphones are not coming out at all with the case open. The headphones do a great job of keeping them in place and keeping the charger pins connected to the back of the buds where the contacts are. I'm pleased with them. For $90 headphones that are normally like $140, I feel like I got a great deal instead of buying like Galaxy Buds or AirPods or TicPods Pro. They all look like good products, but this scratched that itch at a sub-$100 price and does just about everything I want. I know there's some people that might not like the fact that Amazon Voice Services is the primary voice assistant, but you don't really have to use it. You can just not use it and use your regular digital assistant and you're good to go. Like I said, I'm really pleased. And this is not me taking a shot at TicPods. They work great for me for almost 2 years. I had a hardware issue where one failed and it just was cost prohibitive to repair when you started looking at the cost.
That's weird about the micro USB on there because almost everything these days is coming out with USB-C.
I think it's because pretty much everything in the Fire line is still using micro USB mm-hmm. as far as I know.
Yeah, and you know, right now the Echoes are two ways, right? The one generation, I think it's the second gen of the Dot have the micro USB, and then they went to a proprietary one on the third generation Dot, or a circular one, as well as on, I think the Echo Plus has always had it as well. It's weird. And even the Google Home second gen mini has also gone to a little round barrel one. So I think the jacks, I don't think the companies have fully bought into the USB-C jack, which is weird to me.
So I have here a Samsung Gear 360 that came out in 2017.
Yep.
It has a USB type C.
That's ridiculous.
Adapter on it.
Exactly.
From 2017.
So I think that that's a minor quirk, but it is worth noting, and I'm glad you did, because I think that that is poor planning because of the fact that micro USB is notorious for breaking, and you are going to move your charger. You're absolutely going to move your little case thing all the time. Mm-hmm. It's going to happen, and I am glad that you mentioned that. With that said, I was actually interested. When I heard you mention you were getting these, I was interested to find out more, because I've been waiting for a pair that myself. They're not in Canada yet, but I've had my finger on the pulse for some things. And after your review, I'm even more interested. It sounds like it would be right up my alley. And I love that it sounds like it does good isolation, because that is an important part for me, because I have kids and they scream.
The only thing I don't know is I don't know when it's going back to regular price. So this dropped and everyone was like, why did the price drop? And they seem to have attached this to their big game day pricing that they've been doing for Amazon devices. So it's entirely possible the price may go up in the next day, 2 week, who knows? Maybe this is the new price and they just aren't saying it. But for $90, I think they're kind of a steal when you look at the price of like the Galaxy Buds, the AirPods and stuff like that. Now, one of your trade-offs I should have mentioned there is like certain versions of the AirPods and the Galaxy Buds will do wireless charging on the back for the case. This doesn't do that, but I don't care. I don't have a phone that does wireless charging, so I'm not really invested in that yet.
Well, perhaps one day when you go back to Apple, you'll be able to give us a review of the AirPods compared to these, because we know you're going to go entirely all back.
Well, even if I did, why would I get AirPods when this works with both?
Because obviously, if you're going to be an Apple user, you have to have AirPods. I was under the understanding it was part of the terms of service.
I am an Apple user currently. I have an iPad Pro of this generation.
Well, then you violated the terms of service.
Oh, damn. Are they going to turn me into the human centipad?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Suncast, any questions on this before we roll through the close?
How is the comfortability on it? Because that's one thing that always sticks in the back of my mind is when you're sticking earbuds in your ear. You know, to me, after just about 10 minutes, that's going to get uncomfortable no matter what you're using.
Once I got the right tips on there, much better. When I had the medium-sized tips on there, within 10, 15 minutes, my ears hurt. And I was like, oh my God, this is the worst. When I moved down to the small-sized tips, it felt like things fit in there and rested like they were supposed to. And from what I've read, you can also get the Comply foam tips and put them on there. And I've used those for my IEMs before, and those fit really well. And the way that they kind of, you crush them down, they expand in the ear canal. They take a lot of the strain off the ear itself. So you could also put the Comply tips on there if you wanted.
That's good to know.
So they're really comfortable for me, though.
What you're saying is that for comfort, you should find the tip that's right for you. Is that what you're telling me?
That is, in essence, what I'm telling you about headphone tips. Yes.
Fair enough.
Just a tip?
Just a tip.
Well, if you have an ear canal big enough to shove that whole Echo Bud in your ear, I think you've got bigger problems.
Fair enough. Well, thank you very much, Chris, for talking all about that. Do appreciate that. And I am super excited to keep following this. And hopefully they'll come to Canada eventually because, you remind me a lot of this character on the TV show FBI that I've been watching where he's constantly got this black earpiece in his ear. Like even when he's like at his kid's school or whatever, he's like constantly got it in there. Character's named Jubal. You can go ahead and look it up.
Back.
You look exactly like him. So obviously I want to also look like him too. So
there we go.
On. Perfect. Perfect.
Cans are back on. No problem.
No, I actually like the look of them. I went back and I listened to when we briefly covered this way back in October when they first announced it, episode 305. And we didn't actually have a lot to say about it. I think we were all kind of wait and see. But the looks, to me at the time, I thought that the looks were a little bit weird, but actually seeing them in your ear, I think that they actually look okay.
They look a lot better than like the Surface versions that had like the giant flat side on them that looked like satellite dishes hanging out the side of your ear. And I don't even think those are out yet, to be honest.
No, they're not.
No. Yeah.
I don't know if they're coming out still.
And that's
let's put it
where
that
they
way.
Should remain.
Right? So, most likely.
Before we go, Suncast, why don't you take a moment to plug and promote where people can usually find you?
So you can usually find me on Twitter. That's normally my hangout these days. At Suncast, that's SUNKAST. But I also do a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff over at GFQ Network. You can check that out over at GFQNetwork.com. And I actually have a big announcement. Supposedly, I've just got this notification from Mr. Zarian himself while we were doing the show. He says, one of your favorite shows is coming back on Friday.
Tech News Weekly?
No.
Oh.
The other one.
Big Brother Cast?
The Free For All.
Which one?
The Free For All?
The Free For All.
The Free For All.
The Free For All. I don't know that I remember the Free For All, to be honest.
It's been a while.
Albert does in the chat room.
I apologize. Sorry, Mr. Zarian.
He says that is coming back on Friday, this Friday, so.
Wow. Well, I don't remember. I'm sorry. I totally remember it. You should absolutely check it out. Best thing
I know
ever.
A lot of people have been saying that they've desperately wanted it back, and he's telling me tonight that he's going to do it on Friday. So
cool. Well, that's awesome.
Nice.
Take that with a grain of salt. Knowing Andrew Zarian, I mean, he might just get drunk and forget to do it. So
fair enough. Chris, anything that you want to plug or promote?
We've touched on it a few times, but the Starling Tribune did wrap its run. So one last final plug: if you enjoyed the show Arrow, you enjoyed the Starling Tribune, please go check out the final episode available on YouTube at youtube.com/GunnaGeek and also the audio version over at starlingtribune.com.
So on that note, for episode something of the official GunnaGeek.com show, I'm Stephen John Drew saying I forgot the number of the episode, and that's just the way it's going to be.
I'm Suncast, and I'm going to take a 360 shot. Say hi.
I'm Chris Farrell, and I'll say this to you, my friends, with all the love in my heart and all the wisdom in the universe, take it sleazy.
Oh, God. How dare you do that to my heartstrings at the end, Chris? Bye.
's for checking out another episode of the official GunnaGeek.com show. If you like the show, please give us a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts or a thumbs up on YouTube. You can always join us for our live recording sessions, which stream Mondays at 8:45 p.m. Eastern at www.geeks.live. And remember, you can find our full back catalog at GunnaGeek.com/show. If you're itching for more geeky content, check out other shows on GunnaGeekNetwork.com. Voice work was by Emily Prokop of the Story Behind podcast. That's it for this episode. We hope to see you back again next week.